South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A minute and a half past the hour, and we begin a brand new broadcast here at the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where we live. That's where you go if you would like to participate in the free and easy and readily accessible Horn chat room. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password, and jump into the free Horn chat. Once there, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Steve from Georgistan, BT Blom, and moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes. And more to wander in as the moments go by. Hell, we haven't even rung the tardy bell yet. No. Hell no. All right. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday, the 17th day of October, 2017, here at the Horn. And, well, I got a feeling I'd kind of hoped that we'd just be going back to whatever horrible thing Donald Trump did today. Because every day, Donald Trump does 6 or 7 horrible things, and we have to pick amongst them to see which ones we will be talking about. Of course he did. But I fear that we're going to be sort of revisiting a topic from Moran Monday. I love that graphic, Sparky. In the chat room, a picture of Jackie Gleason with his arms outstretched at beautiful Miami Beach. Good morning, America. What dumb shit did Trump do today? Absolutely. But I fear we're going to be revisiting a topic from yesterday, because to ignore this kind of stuff is just to say, it's America, and I mean, that's just how we are. That's just the kind of people we are. We can't help it. No, we can't. Definitely can't help it. Yep. Right. No, we can't do that. But before we go any further, I've got to send out thanks. Thanks to Nancy in New York. Thank you, Nancy, very kindly for being a partial sponsor of this evening's program. Thank you to Arthur in Arizona, also a partial sponsor of this evening's program. And thank you to our buddy Laborman out in New Mexico way for being a partial sponsor of this evening's program. So that means that this evening's fundraising goal was knocked down by $35. And that means that we only have $335 to raise this evening to catch up with what we missed out on last night. So $335 to go, and that $5 bill just really makes the ciphering kind of a pain in the ass. But that's where we are, and that's what keeps this program on the air for what we are only a week away from saying has been 12 years, a dozen years. Mm-hmm. 12 years of live, progressive broadcasting here at the Horn. We fired this thing up for the first time on October the 24th, 2005. We had been live previous to that in America's fifth smallest radio market, And we went from the fifth smallest radio market to the world. And that's pretty awesome. So, in the meantime, in the next week, if folks would like to become subscribers and help us get to that magic number of $410 a month subscribers, that would be freaking awesome. You can do it by clicking the little button there at, under Contribute. This is Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. Or you can go over to Patreon.com if you absolutely despise PayPal. Just go to Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid and you can subscribe there. Okay? Yeah. So, that's where it all stands. 335 to go. And yes, here, now that we are on the downhill side of October, bills to pay. Well, I mean, there were bills to pay on the uphill side of October, too, but you know what I mean. So that's, and something I haven't been giving out and should have been, remember, if you don't like either one of those alternatives, you can always help out through the U.S. Postal Service. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And I'll tell Boss Man Wayne, and he'll go eagerly to the little UPS store where our mailbox is, and he'll pick up the mail and maybe fight off the occasional Kleagle dragon, Cyclops, Klansman, because you know they get their mail there too. Because I mean, why wouldn't you do business with a well-known domestic terrorism organization like the Klan? I mean, they pay their bills just like everybody else, right? I mean, maybe maybe the folks over there could, maybe there's a Nazi or something who could get a mailbox there. They'd probably do business with them, too. Hell, it all spins. But anyway, that's where we find ourselves with this particular Titanic Tuesday. Remember, everything here is free. Everything, that is, except nutritional supplements from Horn Labs. That's right, that's right. I gotta ask you, have you tried new from Horn Labs collated collards? That's right, collated collards from Horn Labs contains the nutritional goodness of a whole pot of collard greens cooked out under Granny's carport roof on a warm summer's afternoon. Yes, indeed, collated collards. Only from Horn Labs. You know, I've always been more of a turnip greens kind of guy, never much of a collards fan, and consequently, to this day, the only way I can get my collard nutritional goodness is with collated collards from Horn Labs. And remember, there's a special going on right now. If you buy a month's supply of collated collards, 30 whole days, maybe 31, is only $29.95. You can get a 2 month supply for only $60, and a 3 month supply will cost you only $91. That's collated collards capsules from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes, use no hooks, post no bills. This side up, operators are standing by. This is a free call, and it is all absolutely bullshit. Just like every other nutritional supplement offered on every other radio program. That's right, collated collards from Horn Labs. You'll be glad you didn't. Collated collards. Wouldn't you love to know what they're like? Well, you never will, 'cause it's not real. I guess you'll just have to go over and order some collated collards from Alex Jones or something, or maybe some ground-up chicken bone chocolate paleo nutrition beverage or something. Yeah. Arthur wanting to know, getting in on the act. Will it help with Ace's boner, even though he's hundreds of miles away? Absolutely. Collated collards is, well, it's a boner bonus is what collated collards are. And thank you, Arthur, for asking. See, we have a concerned community here that really cares about one another. So there we are. Just your horn nutritional supplement for the evening. I think there's a list somewhere. You know, maybe one of these days we'll do a premium and I don't know, we'll send out some bottles of, you know, freaking cornstarch or something in capsules and label it collated collards and the OMG okra and, you know, badass Brussels sprouts and things like that. I did find out, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, it was my official giggle of the morning. He said, I'm betting when you came up with OMG okra, you chuckled and thought to yourself, what a bunch of bullpucky. Well, my friend, you were wrong. A real nutritional supplement as such exists. I just saw this ad on Instagram for OMG chocolate, sponsored. Wow, this totally changes everything we thought we knew about getting lean and healthy. Definitely going to try this today. Click the image to check it out for yourself. Even when you're trying to mercilessly mock them, they mock themselves. Just mind-boggling, isn't it? Well, Earther already beat you to that, Asa. I'm afraid even if you use different word-knowing words, that doesn't cover for your tardiness. Do collated collards help enhance one's erection, Bob? Well, you'll just have to ask Earther to find out, damn it. Okay? Earther took one for the team. Clarity noting, I think a suppository form of collated collards is what is needed to get the kinks out of Lamar Alexander's colon. Bipartisan bit-a-butt healing magic. Clarity. That's what conservative curative cucumber was for. You'll note the special offer for conservative curative cucumber from yesterday's program. Yes. Okay, so we've gotten that stuff out of the way. Hopefully, we'll knock down the $335 this evening and not have to, you know, carry over a what's it's into whenever. But. No, I was all set up to talk about the ongoing sleazing and sliming. Look, I'm anti-war, okay? I'm especially anti-stupid wars. If somebody comes after us, you know, here on our soil, sure, sign me up. But using our military to run around and, oh, make life easier for the sublime, noble, majestic, serene, gracious highnesses of the royal house of Ibn Saud by coordinating their airstrikes on houses where little children are asleep in, say, Yemen. No, I'm not signed up for that. No, not even a little bit. So, with that in mind, I may be anti-war, and I may think that we do some really, really stupid things with our military, but these are mostly young people who sign on to do what they're told. And who sacrifice their constitutional rights and subrogate them to something called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And for the vast part of it all, serve honorably. So when somebody like Geezer Disgustus decides to start trying to exploit their deaths. You know, at first people went after him saying, you know, could you be bothered to even take note that four members of our military were killed in Niger? And, you know, but he was busy tweeting about Bob Corker or you know, his hemorrhoids or whatever it is he tweets about because he's a fucking moron, dotard. Well, then he began to push back by saying that he was the only person who ever called. He was the only president who called the parents of fallen soldiers. And then took it a step further by saying John Kelly didn't get a call from Barack Obama when his son was killed in Afghanistan. And this is one of those Tangerine Tiberius patented oblique pieces of unmitigated crap. Because no, I guess President Obama didn't call John Kelly. He and Michelle met with them personally. Which Trump has certainly not done with the four fallen soldiers who were killed in Niger. And, of course, the question then becomes one of what in the hell were we, you know, doing in Niger? Yeah. So since Donald Trump can't be bothered to mention them, their names are Staff Sergeant Brian C. Black, Staff Sergeant Jeremiah W. Johnson, Staff Sergeant Dustin M. Wright, and Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. Okay? That's their names. Because you'll never hear them from Donald J. Trump. And I was prepared to, you know, dive deep on this, go into considerable detail. And then I saw a lot of other stuff that sort of harkened back to what we were talking about last night. And damn. Really? First of all, this. This needs to be mentioned before Thursday because this event is going down on Thursday. Rick Scott, the Republican governor of Florida, who has benefited, of course, being a Republican, from white wing votes, from Klan votes, from neo-Nazi votes, because it's not like the neo-Nazis and Klansmen run around voting for Democrats. Rick Scott has declared a state of emergency in Alachua County, Florida. Alachua County, Florida is the county wherein resides or wherein exists the city of Gainesville, which is in turn home to the University of Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the University of Florida agreed to rent the Phillips Center to Richard Spencer, America's most visible neo-Nazi, and loudest neo-Nazi, and most petulant neo-Nazi. This is after originally deciding not to, and then they changed course and said, okay, whatevs. It cost what do they call his little national little neo-Nazi group, the National Policy Institute? It cost them $10,000 to rent the Phillips Center. But now, since the entire reason for being there. You know, it's not to promote the free exchange of ideas. It's not to charge up a dialogue inside the marketplace of ideas. No, no, no. The only reason that that Richard Spencer goes and does what he does is because he is a neo-Nazi and he wishes to project a greater Nazi presence in this country so as to intimidate the people that the Nazis hate. And also, hopefully, because this is one of their stated aims and goals, hopefully their goal is one of their stated goals is to start what they call a race war. And every time that they can get a rumble going, they do. And so when it was announced that they would be that Richard Spencer and his little gang of miserable shit eating neo-Nazis would be gathering at the Phillips Center on the campus of the University of Florida, having paid $10,000 to rent it. Well, people opposed to neo-Nazi Richard Spencer and his shit-eating allies, shit-eating, cousin-fisting, mother-humping. There are not enough disgusting things, words, phrases in the English language to which we can append to Richard Spencer, National Policy Institute, and neo-Nazis. I mean, these are some serious, serious booger eaters. All right, we're talking about the toenail clipping toothpick brigade, in full regalia. All right, but here's the thing: because they seek to incite riot. Because that is the purpose of the National Policy Institute and Richard Spencer, well, the University of Florida has an affirmative legal duty to do the most it can to protect people who are on its campus and likely to possibly be harmed by what comes out of this. Now, lately, Richard Spencer has taken to showing up. I mean, this happened like a week or so ago. They showed up for 15 minutes and declared victory because they marched in Charlottesville again, and then they ran away. It's similar to some of the shenanigans that went down in the Bay Area a month or so ago. So, come Thursday, he's supposed to speak at the Phillips Center, and the University of Florida is spending $500,000 taxpayer dollars to provide security so that a neo-Nazi can try to incite a riot. I'm just wondering, you know, Florida being Florida, the fact that everybody isn't insured in Florida, things like that. I'm just wondering how much medical coverage, $500,000 or $500,000 would provide. Not much, probably. How many teacher salaries in the state of Florida is $500,000? Yeah, how many scientist salaries for people who study things like climate change and sea level rise, neither of which are allowed to even be mentioned by the government that is run by Richard Spencer, or not? Oh, thank you, Dr. Freud. No, I appreciate the wink and the little salute there. Yeah, I do. No, the government that's run by Rick Scott in Florida. Mm-hmm. So because Scott has declared an emergency, a state of emergency in Alachua County, the Division of Emergency Management is now in control of the coordination of security efforts before and after the event, including the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Nasty little shit-eating, incestuous, punk-ass, sorry, loser, dirtbag Richard Spencer is not happy. He's afraid that he says there was no need where there was no need for an emergency declaration. He said it's overkill, and you shouldn't do things like that unless there's an invasion or, you know, a hurricane. But see, that's the problem. This is an invasion. Neo-Nazis are invading the campus of the University of Florida. And, you know, Richard Spencer really should be grateful that it's not, say, my father's generation responding to news of neo-Nazis on the march at the University of Florida. Because, you know what? That generation knew what to do with a Nazi. They knew what the only good Nazi was. But now we live in a culture that has to mollycoddle them and treat them like the special snowflakes that they obviously think that they are, and make sure that their blessed, precious little warm-hearted, tender peelings aren't hurt by the mean Antifa. Do you ever stop to think that the entire United States military, from, say, December the 7th, 1941 to August 1945, was just one big gathering of Antifa? Because it was. Those weren't liberal Christian Democrat socialists. We were, them was Nazis. And fascism by a different strain over with the warlords of Japan. Right. So $500,000. $500,000 so that Richard Spencer can stand up on a stage and talk about how white people will not be replaced. Or maybe mutter some more about Lügenpresse. The lying press. Great God Almighty, what a turd he is. Oh, there goes Bob calling names again. I'm setting up a straw man. What else do you do with a Nazi? Do you speak nicely of Nazis? Do you speak warmly, kindly? Do you remember Nazi mothers on Mother's Day? Do you sit down with Nazi dads and watch the U.S. Open together on Father's Day? Do you make sure that that the little Nazis are all accounted for on your Christmas card list? They're turds. They're human waste. They are wasting air. They are wasting water. They are wasting the life force energy that animates living things on this, the only planet we're absolutely sure actually accommodates life in the universe. Mm-hmm. Anatole in the chat room. Mr. Bob is triggered. I reckon so. Hmm? Yep. $500,000. It's a lot of bucks. I bet it wouldn't cost $500,000 to lose a lawsuit by Richard Spencer and their National Policy Institute for not letting them speak. That's what you call your cost-benefit analysis there. Or could it be that maybe Rick Scott doesn't want to completely suppress Nazi speech in Florida, because maybe he's well aware that there might just be enough Nazis and Klansmen in Florida to make the difference in a close election. But I mentioned something at the front end of this discussion, and that is that the National Policy Institute ponied up some 10 large to rent the Phillips Center, which is not exactly, you know, an old Quonset hut there in a far swampy corner of the campus of the University of Florida. $10,000. No, really. Now I realize if you're a real grassroots organization, maybe $10,000 isn't so hard to come by. And by real grassroots organization, I mean real right white wing grassroots organization. Just to let you know right now, Coal River Mountain Watch. This is a crazy story. This is just a nuts story. But if you want to help, it would sure be freaking helpful. This has nothing to do with the 8 campaign. It really doesn't have anything to do with ending mountaintop removal. This story has to do with the rebuilding sustainable communities part of the mission of Coal River Mountain Watch. Now remember, neo-Nazis had $10,000 laying around to rent a building at the University of Florida. Well, we're not talking, what I'm about to tell you has nothing to do with a big old meeting house building. It has to do with a shabby little falling apart house. Coming out of the foreclosure crisis, Wells Fargo Bank found themselves in possession of properties that they knew they were never going to sell. Okay. Including houses in the sacrifice, the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. And they had one vacant house down in Whitesville. And it was just sitting there gathering taxes. And sitting there empty and losing value. So Wells Fargo came up with this notion whereby they would find local charitable organizations and they would give foreclosed houses away. And they gave a house to Coal River Mountain Watch. Son of a gun. Now, the real estate market down there is for shit. Like I said, it's smack dab in the middle of the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. It's not like it's a seller's market. So Coal River Mountain Watch said, okay, we'll take the house and we'll try to do some public good with it. Or some kind of good. Needed a ton of work. And it just turned out that there were a pair of veterans, a couple, who had special needs kids, and they were kind of desperate for a place to live. You know, they weren't members of the anti-mountaintop removal community or anything. This is, you know, this is just that book of Matthew chapter 25 business about if you've done the least of these, maybe you've done it also unto me. You know, the part where you clothe the naked and feed the hungry and house the homeless. So Cold River Mountain Watch says, look it. Y'all move in there. As you can, you know, do what you can to make the place more livable. We're not even going to charge you rent. We don't want any money from you. We just want to make sure that you're safe, you've got a roof over your head, and that your kids have a place to lay their heads at night. Well, Cold River Mountain Watch didn't get title to the house until late in 2016. Wells Fargo owned the house in 2015 and was liable for the property taxes on the house in 2015 and let them go delinquent. Cold River Mountain Watch didn't know this. Instead, what happened was they didn't send the tax ticket to Cold River Mountain Watch at all. Cold River Mountain Watch, meanwhile, is a legitimate, honest-to-God, no-kidding, 501c3 charitable tax-exempt organization. And so consequently, last month, a notice shows up. We're going to sell your house, says the sheriff of Boone County, West Virginia. The sheriff of Boone County, West Virginia, for delinquent taxes that were owed by Wells Fargo and not by Cold River Mountain Watch, is going to sell a house and kick out a veteran couple with special needs kids. Yeah. Unless Cold River Mountain Watch pays Wells Fargo's taxes. And so there's a campaign underway, and it's got to happen by the, you know, basically it's got to happen in the next 4 days or so. To raise a little over $1,000. So that we can keep this couple with their special needs kids in the house that we let them live in, we Cold River Mountain Watch, because I'm a part of the organization, you know, for free, because it's the right thing to do. $1,000. Because Cold River Mountain Watch doesn't have it. On the other hand, the National Policy Institute, otherwise known as a bunch of shit-smelling Nazis, cesspool-swimming Nazis, well, they just happened to have $10,000 laying around with which to rent the Phillips Center on the campus of the University of Florida in Gainesville. By the way, in case anybody would like to help out with this effort to keep this family in the home, there's a simple PayPal button over at crmw.net. And if a little community made miracle happened, it would be wonderful. So there's that. But the story that I've been reading about this state of emergency in Alachua County and the $500,000 that Florida is going to have to spend to make sure that the Nazis don't run wild, it comes from the Tallahassee Democrat. And it does a pretty good job of laying out most of the stuff. But I guess, you know, deadlines are deadlines and spot reporting is spot reporting. And there's not always you don't always have the opportunity to do the really, really deep research to find out where did a bunch of goddamn pissant, shit-eating Nazis manage to have $10,000 laying around, you know, to rent the Phillips Center. And money to rent rooms at other universities, too. Because, see, the fact that they've got these monies means that they've got people giving money to them. Which means that we have a larger Nazi problem in this country than we have even begun to consider. I keep saying it, and meanwhile the for-profit media keeps talking about, you know, John and Jane Nazi out in middle America and their economic anxiety. We have a real live, honest-to-Jesus, no-kidding Nazi problem, Klan problem. Although if you do need to get some of it out of your system, this is a free product placement. The latest version of the video game Wolfenstein is coming out, and in the latest version of Wolfenstein, you get to blow the fuck away, I mean shoot them right in the head, Nazis and Klansmen. Apparently, according to the trailer. Just saying. Yeah, just, it, you know, beats the hell out of doing it in real life. Because for some reason I can't fully understand, it's still not okay to kill Nazis in this country. You know, unless it's like officially government sanctioned and they're not speaking English. And don't have bad haircuts. That kind of thing. But that, you know, where? Where's their money coming from? Is there anybody doing journalism on this? Where did the $10,000 that the National Policy Institute used to pay for the Phillips Center? You know, it's non-refundable. It's not like it's a deposit. It's paid money. Where'd they get it? Who gave it to them? Oh, well, see, Bob, you silly man. That's dark money. And they don't have to report who's giving them money, because yeah, we wouldn't want that happening. We wouldn't want to know who the donors are to Nazis. No, we wouldn't. I mean, if it just turned out that maybe somebody who was, say, a wealthy member of the NRA gave some $10,000 to a bunch of Nazis, I mean. That's not relevant to anything, is it? Or that maybe a local ward healer for the GOP gave some thousands of dollars to Nazis. That's not relevant, and that person has an absolute right to anonymously support Nazis because this here is America. I mean. We've all been told, you know, thanks to Citizens United, that money is speech. But not everybody who speaks wants people to see them speaking and recognize them or hear them speaking and recognize their voice. They just want to speak through the soft, dulcet tones of money and not have their speech attached to their persons. Because I'm pretty sure that the National Policy Institute isn't a front group for National Policy Institute industries that are out there making widgets and gimcracks and Spacely space sprockets and Cogswell cogs. Somebody has to be giving them the money. And the somebodies who are giving them the money are Nazis. So that would be kind of nice to know. Wouldn't it? But it's a secret. Sparky pointing out the National Policy Institute raised $50,000 in late 2016 and early 2017 from an online fundraising drive and has solicited donations to be sent to its Arlington, Virginia post office box. But in February 2017, VDACS, the Virginia Department of who knows what, had listed the group as not authorized to solicit in Virginia. So that means they raised $50,000 through direct appeals to other Nazis. Because I just somehow I don't see any of that much talked about, but seldom seen George Soros money going to the Nazis. I'm guessing they're not getting grants from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. No. This just means that Nazis have at least $50,000 in donative power. Thank you, Sparky. But they've got a lot more than $50,000. Richard Spencer isn't traveling the country and low-bagging it and sleeping on floors. And that kind of stuff takes serious scratch. Maybe that's why Kaiser Kumquat had such a hard time condemning Nazis a couple of months back. Maybe they're part of his donor base, too. After all, according to Forbes, whatever he was worth in the first place, well, the Clementine Caligula is worth a shitload less now. And he was never a billionaire in the first place. He was just a petty little grifter, a pissant multimillionaire. You know, but like Deep Throat said in All the President's Men, follow the money. Follow the money. Yeah. So we've got that to deal with. And that's plenty. But there's more. And like I said, it, and the more part goes back to some of the stuff that we were talking about last night. Anybody ever seen Mark Faber? Mark Faber is an investor who goes by the moniker of Dr. Doom. No, he doesn't. Doesn't wear all gray and have a skinless cat, or a hairless cat. Skinless cat, ew. No, a hairless cat. But Dr. Doom shows up on various financial TV shows on CNBC, Fox Business, Bloomberg TV, places like that. He does a print-only gloom, boom, and doom report in which he prognosticates about the stock market. And he's now the latest to jump out and declare himself to be a racist. Yeah. In his gloom, boom, and doom report, he wrote, "I don't want to enter into a serious discussion about the tearing down of monuments of historical personalities. But I cannot omit mentioning how the liberal hypocrites condemned the Taliban when they blew up the world's two largest standing Buddhas, but the very same people are now disturbed by statues of honorable people whose only crime was to defend what all societies had done for more than 5,000 years, keep a part of the population enslaved. Wait a minute. He's Swiss. I think I get to do an accent, don't I? Now, I don't know for sure if he's the French-speaking Swiss or the German-speaking Swiss, but I'm going to assume German.
Thank God white people populated America and not the blacks. Otherwise, the U.S. would look like Zimbabwe, which it might look like one day anyway. But at least America enjoyed 200 years in the economic and political sun under a white majority.
And, of course, everyone's favorite phrase,
I am not a racist,
comma, and you know the word that comes next.
I am not a racist, but the reality, no matter how politically incorrect, needs to be spelled out as well. And let's not forget that the African tribal heads were more than happy to sell their own slaves to white, black, and Arab slave dealers. If stating some historical facts makes me a racist, then I suppose I am a racist. For years, Japanese were condemned because they denied the Nanking Massacre.
Yeah. He's apparently made some dough in what are called emerging markets. Unless I miss my guess entirely. Well, emerging markets means going in and preying upon nations that are lacking in enough infrastructure to stop the predatory practices of, say, emerging markets investors. Yeah, but if that
makes me a racist, then so be it. Put the candle back.
Mm-hmm. Because white people made America great. Never mind that poor people, and primarily people of color, did all the fucking heavy lifting. It was some. It was the thinking that got us there. And I love how they always declare that whenever one of these nasty little racists says, I'm not a racist, but, and then ponies up some sort of bullshit, ginned up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, phonied up history to support their contention, it's almost always easily challengeable. Because, see, America, the whole of America did not enjoy 200 years in the economic and political sun under a white majority. In fact, millions and millions of Americans lived in a nightmare hellscape of political and economic agony under that white majority. And you only get a white majority by the violent actions necessary to prevent participation by anyone else in that aforementioned economic and political sunshiny weather. Ron in Raleigh asks, "Hey, Bob, was that Detlef Kincaid of the Fatherland Kincaids?" Yeah, it was! He also sounds a lot like the Pope used to sound back when the Pope was German. "You will go to hell for wearing a little latex thingy on your John Thomas! On your Johann Thomas!" See what I mean? Thank God white people populated America and not the blacks. Oh, Dr. Doom. People of color did populate America. In fact, they significantly outnumbered white folks all over the South back in the slavery era. That's why white folks lived in such terror, because they knew how evil what they were doing was, and they were scared to death that the people they were doing it to would figure it out and one of these days get all even and chop them into chutney. Chutney, now with crackers. Courtesy of Ron in the, I'm sure it's got to be frozen soon north, but probably still in the sandbox. Regarding investing in emerging markets, "I'll bet you money that I can make us both money by exploiting this cheap right-to-work labor state." Yeah, emerging markets don't just happen. Look, West Virginia's an emerging market now. And so is Alabama and South Carolina. And Mississippi, sure. Mm-hmm. And the very same people who are now disturbed by
statues of honorable people whose only crime was to defend what all societies had done for more than 5,000 years keep a part of the population enslaved.
Animals can be bred and slaughtered. Honorable. That's right. Committing treason to perpetuate slavery is, according to Mark Faber, honorable. Now, you see, if there was any justice, Mark Faber would go broke. But, reached for comment, a spokesperson for Fox Business Network said, "Faber does not appear on the network often and will not be on in the future." CNBC and Bloomberg TV all said, "Nah, we're not going to invite him back either. I don't think so." Jesus Christ. Get that man a pair of tall black boots. Maybe he could be the warm-up act at the Phillips Center in Gainesville on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that too. Steve pointing out, Steve in New York. Isn't treason the very antithesis of honorable? Well, yeah, it kind of is. No, not even kind of is. It absolutely is. There's nothing honorable in being treasonous. Silly us. Oh, I guess I left out the Italian Swiss. Well, but his name is Mark with a C, Faber, F-A-B-E-R. I'm good with the accent I chose. I can live with it. So, that's a Swiss guy who probably hangs out in New York. What do you say we cross the continent? to Alameda County, California, where a lawsuit has been filed against against Tesla. I know. We all love the Tesla. We all think it's the future of automobiles. But the fact of the matter is, Tesla has grave labor problems and apparently some pretty abiding cultural ones as well. KNTV reports that the lawsuit was filed yesterday. Former employees of Tesla saying that they were routinely called, the N-word. You know, I had a note from Matt in San Francisco a little bit ago. He said, White House staff won't let Trump talk about the soldiers because they know he will pronounce that country's name the same way as that word with two G's, an I, an N, an E, and an R, and that isn't ginger. They are protecting their great white grope. Oh, wait a minute. Abso-damn-lutely. Cowbell, Matt, for great white grope. And it's true. And that same word is the one that workers at Tesla claim in this lawsuit they were repeatedly called. Owen Diaz is one of the plaintiffs. He had started working at Tesla when he found drawings of a racist nature of African Americans just sort of laying around the Tesla plant. Some of these drawings were pickaninny drawings of, you know, little 19th century enslaved black children. One day, Mr. Diaz was visiting with his 19-year-old son. The son also worked at the Tesla plant, and a supervisor looked up, or they came upon a supervisor, and he said, I was turning the corner, I was coming out to give my son his lunch, and his supervisor started calling him a fucking, you know, that word. So Mr. Diaz complained. He reached out to the employment agency that provided, that put him in the Tesla plant. That's how they get around a whole bunch of labor laws. Everybody's a temp until they see if you're going to work out, and then you get to be an ordinary member of the abused workforce. The staffing company didn't bother to respond. He then sent an email to his supervisor at Tesla. The Tesla supervisor didn't respond. A little bit later, they let his son, Demetric, go. And then, after less than a year on the job, Owen quit because he couldn't stand the racism anymore. This is not the first lawsuit. One of the employees on the production floor filed a lawsuit against Tesla saying that the company failed to protect him from a pattern and practice of racial harassment, and even provided a video of co-workers screaming that word at him, and, as a bonus, threatening to cut him to pieces. Yes. See what I mean when I said that we weren't necessarily going to be able to get into the topicality that I wanted to get into because we were going to have to go back to what we were dealing with last night? And I stand by my thesis. I feel like this and issues of sexual harassment, if you just blow by them and you don't give them the time that they both need and deserve, then, in a way, it's a suggestion that maybe it isn't as important as other things. You know, we didn't blow right past it back when when the Trump tape came out. But my God almighty, a whole bunch of Americans did. Some women walking around, shirts that say, he can grab me by the, with an arrow pointing to their crotches. Cool. But, yeah, we know Donald Trump is going to do Donald Trump things. In many ways, it's the little things that happen, isolated incidents, I think, that make up the greater reality, the greater totality of viciousness and hatred in this country. One of these stories had another go back to Africa reference. I remember reading it earlier today and thinking, well, damn, all you got to do in New York State, all you got to do is go to a pizza parlor and the city attorney's wife will tell you to go back to Africa for sitting and trying to have a pizza. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a trial going on in Cincinnati, Ohio. The Black Lives Matter movement is organized for this thing. It's a murder trial. It's the murder trial of Earl Jones, white guy. Earl Jones is on trial for murder. For having killed, allegedly killed Kevin Nery. Kevin Nery was a black man who, an African-American man who shared a home with his girlfriend in Colerain Township, Ohio. The murder happened on May the 16th, 2016. His girlfriend was Sierra Prather, and she had previously dated Earl Jones. Earl Jones had fathered a child with her. And Earl Jones was mad that Sierra Prather was seeing, dating, living with Kevin Nery. Jason Yanzel testified that he heard Earl Jones repeatedly use that particular word to describe Kevin Nery. Back on May the 16th, 2016, he was ranting and raving that word in repeated text messages to Sierra Prather. And then he allegedly revenge porned her by posting a quote unquote half naked photo of her on Facebook and Twitter. That made things escalate. In his testimony, Jason Yanzel said Earl Jones shot and killed. Well, never mind. He said that kind of started everything. Black Lives Matter said Earl Jones didn't want a black man raising his son, so he drove to the house where his ex-girlfriend and Kevin lived and shot Kevin in the back. And that is what he did. The jury heard the 911 call that was placed by Jason Yanzel. Black Lives Matter have been present for during the proceedings because they are decidedly afraid and justifiably afraid that the prosecuting attorney in the case will offer a plea bargain to Earl Jones. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been showing up with no justice for Kevin Nira, no plea deal for Earl Jones. Jesus. Murka. Somebody get Lee Greenwood on the line. It's time for him to sing about how awesome we are again. Yeah. So we're at 11 minutes past the hour. We've still got $335 to raise to fill in the hole that we started digging last night. And hopefully that will happen somewhere soon. It's a real swamp tonight, I'm telling you. I mean, this, we're not done. I'm trying to figure out whether to do this on the front side or on the back side of the break. I think it's probably best done on the front side. Because we've talked about Nazis, and we've talked about Klansmen, and we've talked about racists. And there's no... You know, there's no predictable racist, I suppose. You can't necessarily look at somebody and go, he's more likely to be a racist. Now, I mean, there are tells. Things like the Confederate battle flag vanity display plate on the front of your car, that kind of thing. Sure. Walking around saying things like, heritage, not height. Right. But I guess in some ways... It's more shocking when it's somebody you hope would know better. Or when it's somebody who's young enough not to have been, that you hope is has not been completely inculcated into the hate community, given their young and so-called tender age. Does that make any sense? Or am I just trying to wrap my head around, because it happens, it exists among the very old and, yeah, among the very young. It sure as hell does. This comes from Salt Lake City, Utah. At which point, a whole lot of the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation are going, well, Jesus Christ, Bob, why didn't you say Salt Lake City?
Mm-hmm. Out in out in Utah or somewhere in Utah, maybe not Salt Lake City. I don't know that. But the Weber School District. The story comes from the Deseret News. Administrators at the Weber School District are trying to find out the whys and the wherefores of an Instagram post that features a carload of absolutely lovely, young, precious white girls, high schoolers, probably cheerleaders. Ten seconds of video of these precious, darling white girls. I guess it's had something like 12,000 views as of last night. I don't fully understand the report where it goes into... I mean, the headline says, Utah school investigating student's video with apparent racial slur. Apparent. Now, when you hear this, you're gonna ask yourself, why in the hell did they use the word apparent in that fucking headline? Uh-huh. The school district's trying to find out how many students were involved. They'd like to know if the footage was recorded on school property or during the school day. School district spokesman Lane Findlay said he'd really like to know if those were for sure students in the Weber district, but he's Lane Findlay's lacking in details. Yeah. We're still trying to figure out the origin of the video, what's being said. Obviously, it's circulating on social media, and you have people that are contacting us with concerns about it, and rightfully so. Oh, yes, rightfully so. But here's the part I don't get. This paragraph. Several commenters condemned the video, okay, calling it racist, disgusting, and embarrassing, calling for the girls to be suspended, period. Some, and again, the use of some, goddamn, this goes so far back now. I remember when it was kind of fresh and new, the use of some say from the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda style manual. Some say, some defended the girls, saying they were young and they were challenged to say gibberish that, when played backward, resulted in the offensive video. I'm trying to think of what that word spoken backwards sounds like. Zruggin. Zruggin. Hey, y'all. Let's everybody say Zruggin. Yeah, I know. Wrong accent. It's Utah. But still. Where do you get that? Where does that excuse come from? This is sickening. Okay, I want to be, I just want to be absolutely clear about it. This is disgusting. This is sickening. I mean, we're talking about girls here who can't be more than maybe 16, 17 tops. Young and fresh-faced and lovely and beautiful and, I don't know, for all I know, they're the mean girls at Weber High School in Utah. But apparently, if the excuse given is to be believed, they're so stupid that somebody can say to them, say this word into a recording camera, and, you know, they'll just do it. And then you've got to turn the thing around and, you know, Pink Floyd it, or, you know, turn me on, dead man, turn me on, dead man. You know, play the record backwards. I don't know. But this is what happened. You got that? I know it was it's hot. I tried to pull it back some so it wouldn't just. But there it is. And the defense is that they're just talking backwards. They didn't mean anything by it. There are some things that are kind of a tell, kind of get. They're in a moving vehicle. The camera is directly in front of the young girl who's driving. So it seems kind of unlikely that, you know, no. That there's just an innocent intent in all of this. Unless somebody with, you know, teenage kids can say, oh, this is a thing on Instagram. There's a thing on Instagram where you could, and it's a game the youngsters are playing where everybody says backwards words to see what they're going to come out to be. Oh, my God. I don't think this is quite like on Snapchat where you put a bunny face over your face. Jesus. You ever wonder if there's any hope for this country? Because I'm getting to kind of where I do. So that seems like a decent place to take a break. It is, of course, the 17th of October. Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And it being a Tuesday, that also means that, Green News Report is coming around. Isn't it? Kind of checking to see. Oh, by the way, remember, if you haven't done it yet, make sure and don't order your 3-month supply of collated collards. All the cool people are taking collated collards. Only from Horn Labs. Sure. I can't resist it. Anyway, let's take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Yep. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back. Hey, light up the phones if you want to. Plenty of opportunities for good conversation to be had. 304-574-8178 or Bob Kincaid Horn via Skype. It's just that easy.
Very young, what will you leave us this time? You're only dancing on this earth for a short while. And though your dreams may toss and turn you now, they will vanish.
wash away like your daddy's best jeans, denim blue, fading up to the sky. And though you want them to last forever, you know he never will. You know he never will. And the patches make the goodbye harder still. Very young, what will you leave us this time? There'll never be a better chance to change your mind. And if you want this world to see better days, will you carry the words of a love with you? Will you ride the great white bird into heaven? And though you want to last forever, you know you never will. Goodbye makes the journey harder still.
It's Tuesday, October 17, 2017.
You can really feel the sheer power of Ophelia.
Record-breaking hurricane batters Ireland. Yes, Ireland.
A turning point as firefighters make significant progress.
Gaining ground against deadliest wildfires in California history. Desperate Puerto Ricans obtaining water from toxic Superfund sites. Plus...
today, tragedy knows no boundaries.
Search for a missing worker suspended after an oil rig explodes in Louisiana.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And I left Florida, and I left Louisiana, and I went to Puerto Rico, and I met with the president of the Virgin Islands.
Alexa, who is the president of the Virgin Islands?
The U.S. Virgin Islands president is Donald Trump.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Donald Trump held a 40-minute press conference in the Rose Garden on Monday. And with all of the assembled media there and all of the hurricanes we've had in the recent weeks and all of the fires, not one of those reporters could manage to ask Donald Trump about climate change and pulling out of the Paris Agreement. As much as Donald Trump seems to be failing, our national media continues to be failing all of us.
Yes, they are. But we won't. Fueled by an unusually warm Atlantic Ocean, Hurricane Ophelia reached Category 3 status on Saturday, breaking the record for the farthest east a major Atlantic hurricane has ever existed. Another record storm in a record Atlantic storm season. Ophelia's remnants smashed into Ireland on Monday.
Ireland.
As of airtime, killing at least 3 people, according to Ireland's national police. A recent study predicted that the warming Atlantic Ocean is putting Europe at risk for even more hurricanes. In Northern California, state fire officials say more than 11,000 firefighters from across the U.S., Canada, and Australia are gaining ground against catastrophic heat and wind-driven wildfires in the state's wine country. It's been the deadliest week of wildfires in California state history. As of airtime, the fires have killed at least 41 people. Nearly 100 people are still listed as missing. More than 5,700 buildings destroyed. Damages in Sonoma County alone are estimated to cost more than $3 billion. Smoke from the fires has generated the worst air quality in the Bay Area's history. It's estimated the fires have already released air pollution equivalent to that released by all of the state's cars in an entire year. Fighting the record western wildfire season of 2017 has cost the federal government nearly $3 billion and has already surpassed the previous record set for firefighting in 2015. And this year's fire season is not over yet. In Portugal and Spain, officials over the weekend reported at least 34 people died in hundreds of wildfires that were whipped up by wind gusts from passing Hurricane Ophelia. And in Brazil, wildfires in the Amazon rainforest are nearing a new annual record as Brazil's dry seasons become even drier. Climate scientists warn that global warming is accelerating the speed of wildfires in California and elsewhere. According to UCLA climate scientist Daniel Swain in an interview with Climate Progress, quote, increasing temperature plays a significant role in making these fires more explosive and covering ground more quickly.
And yet, with all of that, not one single question about climate to the President of the United States in a 40-minute press conference.
In Puerto Rico, nearly a month after Hurricane Maria, 30% of Puerto Rico still lacks potable drinking water. The Washington Post reports that desperate residents have been forced to obtain drinking water from wells at toxic Superfund sites. Food shortages have been reported, but at the White House on Monday, President Trump again suggested that residents are to blame for that as well.
We have massive amounts of food, but they have to distribute the food, and they have to do this. They have to distribute the food to the people of the island. So what we've done is we now actually have military distributing food, something that really they shouldn't have to be doing.
So once again, everyone else but Donald Trump is to blame. Got it.
In Louisiana, unfortunately, Jefferson Parish officials have suspended the search for a missing rig worker after an explosion and fire that engulfed an oil and natural gas storage platform located in Lake Pontchartrain on Sunday. In addition to the missing worker, seven others were injured, three critically. The cause is under investigation, and the state believes no oil was released. But in a separate incident, an oil pipeline rupture off the coast of Louisiana on Friday spilled an estimated 350,000 gallons. Of crude oil. Finally, some good news.
Took you long enough.
The Chinese government announced it has canceled 150 proposed new coal plants, equal to the combined generating capacity of both Germany and Japan. And great news for breathers in Texas. Electric utility Luminant has announced it is closing three unprofitable coal plants in the state earlier than planned because of cheap natural gas and the glut of renewable energy.
Wow, Donald Trump's Barack Obama's war on coal is really hurting these people. For much more on all of those stories, yeah, you worked that out, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And breathe, just breathe.
And here we are at 27 minutes before the hour, 3 minutes past the halfway mark of this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. A couple of remarks regarding that odious, disgusting, revolting, foul, vulgar, nasty, a bit of teenage hijinks from Utah there. Brother Deacon Asa asking, I got a question. Is the scenery going backwards in the Instagram clip? Or are they saying the girls were compelled to drive backwards too? Brother Deacon Asa, I think I detect some cynicism. Mm-hmm. Oh, turn the volume down on the monitors so we don't have the feedback. Then from Earther, you know that if the backwards message were something involving Satan or Asmodeus or something bad about Jesus, there would have been lots of pearl clutching. Or it's, of course, Utah. What if they were talking backwards and wound up saying Joseph Smith was a con man and we're all a bunch of rubes? Oh, yeah, that's been a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's that, too. A little factoid coming from Sparky. Do you know why the firefighters from Australia are in California? It's an exchange program. It's been going on for years. That's one of those, you know, that's one of those noble moments of human cooperation, the kind that helps us continue on as a species, or at least hopefully does. Then there's what showed up in a recent Quinnipiac poll. This gave me a real case of the fantods early today, a case of the jumping, holy shit. 46% of Republicans surveyed. Might want to get the hockey puck for this and the duct tape. As if you didn't need it earlier. You know, in many ways, I depend on y'all to police your... But then again, internet latency. You really do still need the warning, don't you? Of the Republicans surveyed, said they favor a United States nuclear first strike on North Korea. 46%. Why, that's just 4% less than half of the Republicans surveyed in the Quinnipiac poll. Donald Trump is supported by, what, 32-33% of the American people? I guess, like, what are his approval ratings among Republicans? You know, I always wind up in the swamp when we start talking about statistics and ciphering and numbers and stuff. But 46% of Republicans surveyed support a U.S. nuclear first strike on North Korea. Now, you know, we're kind of limited here, so I can't necessarily hear you screaming, and I don't deem it to be particularly beneficial for me to just sit here and scream and maybe, you know, try to vicariously give voice to to our collective angst. So I won't do any screaming. But holy shit! Damnation! Wow! Son of a gun. Yeah, that works, Sparky. Nuclear idiots! Which way do the prevailing winds mostly blow? That's why they're called prevailing. In the Pacific Rim. Yes, as a matter. West to east. So there's that. And then there's the, can I get a little help here? Can someone explain to me the mindset of someone saying, well, you know, let's do it. Where? Oh, nicely done, Arthur.
Lib talkers against a nuclear first strike on North Korea probably thinks Putin is bad.
That's good for a jingle. But that's one of those that kind of renders me just a little, you know, speechless. I mean, this is grasshopper in the ant stuff.
do they think? I mean, do they think there's literally no blowback? Do they think that there would be no consequence, that the rest of the world would just go, well, you know, I mean, you know, the United States, they did it once, a couple of times before. They were probably going to do it again. It was just a matter of time. 46% of Republicans surveyed support a U.S. nuclear first strike on North Korea. What are other ways we could say that? 46% of Republicans surveyed support the immediate death of about 20 million people, including several tens of thousands of American service personnel in South Korea. We could put it that way. 46% of Republicans surveyed support the retaliatory nuclear attack that would be launched against the United States by anyone from China to North Korea itself to Russia. Well, that's another way we could put it. Because if you support one, you support the other. When you see numbers like that, does it not make you wonder for just a minute if maybe the rogue nation, as it turns out, is us? Because that's behavior. That is the behavior of a pariah state. Scott and Punky noting via email. What do you expect? These folks voted for Trump, so they're comfortable with magical thinking. It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye or North and South Korea go up in a blinding incandescent nuclear fireball. And then the fun starts. Because, see, then there will be an emergency meeting of the Security Council at the UN where the Russians and the Chinese are going to say, well, you know, we've got treaty obligations here, and we've got no real choice here. So if I were y'all, I'd clear the United Nations out about 15 minutes ago. Because in a nuclear armed world, one of the foremost understandings is that the use of nuclear weapons will entitle other countries to use them too. You might recall that on that self-same Korean peninsula, a megalomaniac by the name of Douglas MacArthur once wanted to use nuclear weapons against the heathen Chinese. Right? And he had to be rather forcefully shown the door by Harry Truman. And even then, a pissant Republican Congress invited MacArthur to jump up on the cross and self-crucify for a little bit in front of a joint session, wherein he said, old soldiers never die, they just fade away. Well, fade away, motherfucker. Because having him fade away was a whole lot better than having the planet get roasted. Yeah, Earther pointing out, yes, the Quinnipiac survey, 100 Republicans were asked. Survey says, yes, derp. Derp was the only answer. And there's probably some truth in that. Normal's over. Normal's done. Normal is something that we used to think we knew a little bit about, but has gone away for the foreseeable future, if in fact there is any future to be foreseeable in the era of Trump. And with numbers like that, that future is without a doubt in question. Once upon a time, it would have been unthinkable to me to say what I'm about to say. That the rest of the world had better sort things out pretty quick and warn Donald Trump and that 46% of Republican voters that any use of nuclear weapons by the United States of America will be met and dealt with in kind. That's sickening for me to say. Because once upon a time, the thinking was that we were the country that had, yes, we'd used them twice, but that having seen the horror, that we would not do it again. But normal, typical, ordinary, presumptive American conduct, that's over. You know, we've got a long, this is not to say we don't have a long history of doing stupid things in terms of foreign policy and doing evil, mean-spirited shit in domestic policy. But Jesus. I'm not the praying type. In the era of Trump, I don't even know if I'm the hoping type. But if you're of the praying sort, you'd best be praying, lots of prayers, y'all, you'd best be praying that Donald Trump doesn't see those poll numbers or that none of the little minions and underlings and Renfields who scurry around him and eat bugs off the window panes see it and pass it along to him. Sir, here you go. If you want to nuke North Korea, you've almost got half the Republican Party behind you. They'll be partying in the streets, thinking and singing songs about putting boots in asses and stuff like that. And Lee Greenwood will probably, it'll probably make his withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave, until they're vaporized by the retaliatory attack. But if you want to, sir, you got half the Republicans behind you. I don't know if you're ever going to have any better than that. No time like the present, sir. I'm not trying to be overly negative or trying to scare anybody. That's the problem. In the era of Trump, you don't have to try. All you have to do is report facts, and the terror will follow as surely as night follows day. Once upon a time, Dr. Hunter S. Thompson would periodically utter the phrase, "Big darkness soon come." Yeah, I wish he hadn't done himself in. He had his reasons. Anybody who does that does. Some are better than others. But it might have been handy to have him around for this. Sure would have been handy to have had Molly Ivins. Miss Joe Bajan, something fierce. But
But that 46%. Here's the real booby prize. You can't talk to them. And you know what? That number is probably low. You remember how excited the whole country got, including some alleged Democrats, at the prospect of attacking the Iraq? He tried to kill my daddy. Yeah, I know. Golden Thunder. But Bob, if we don't have Armageddon, Jeebus won't come back. Yeah, I got a feeling Jeebus doesn't want to come back to something that's glowing in the dark, but that's me. Scott and Punky, subject line, here's an idea. His chief of staff needs to immediately unplug Trump's cable connection, take away his smartphone, and lead him by the hand down to the White House screening room to watch Henry Fonda and Larry Hagman in Failsafe. It's not in color. It's obviously fake. But beyond that, there's one other problem. The chief of staff, John Kelly. We put a lot of stock in John Kelly. We kind of pretend that he's just there because, well, doggone it. He's trying to keep Trump in check. But that ain't so. John Kelly isn't some altruistic do-gooder who's taking one for the team. Turns out that back when he was the head of Homeland Security, John Kelly gave the ICE people pretty explicit instructions. He told them he told ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, when they were planning mass arrest raids, he told them to describe the targets of the raids as criminals. Down at Vanderbilt University in their law school, using the Freedom of Information Act, the scholars, the students, researchers, uncovered a trove of emails in the Department of Homeland Security. And those emails told ICE officials to use cases from other cities to pad their own raid justifications wherever they were. In the emails, Kelly is referred to as S1. Yeah. DHS executives, I guess, upper-level bureaucrats, instructed other officials in the department to, quote, put together a white paper covering the three most egregious cases in each of their cities, and then to use those egregious cases as justifications for rounding up people with no criminal violations whatsoever. And this was behind the increase in ICE raids that took place shortly after the inauguration of Marcus Aurelius. So be a little careful there about making assumptions about the good faith, the goodwill of John Kelly. After all, he lets Donald Trump verbally abuse him. He let Donald Trump crawl all over the back of his dead boy. And he's still in the job. When a man of principles would have looked at him and said, fuck you, buddy. Fuck you with a red hot poker. I'm out of here. Note coming from Ron in Raleigh. I wonder, says Ron, what would that percentage have been if they had asked that question about Iran? It would have been. I will. In an attempt to answer your question, I'll say I will. I'll suggest that it would have been the same, or a little bit higher. Because once again, these Republicans, you know, they're not making decisions based on facts. In many cases, they're making decisions based on outright lies that are promulgated on Trump's Twitter feed. I mean, Jesus Christ, I just during the Green News, I took a quick look at my feed. And there it was, 54 minutes ago, Donald J. Trump, border wall prototypes underway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's let him have his phone this evening. So much fake news being put in dying magazines and newspapers. Only place worse may be NBC News, CBS News, ABC, and CNN. Fiction writers. Heh. So I guess the CBS report on the fact that, well, his drug czar nominee turned out to be the guy who helped to bury this state in opioids, in pills. It was fiction. And it was so much fiction that the guy, Representative Marino, Pennsylvania, he rescinded his candidacy for drug czar today. You're familiar with that, I'm sure. Oh, by the way, this too from his Twitter feed. Any increase in Obamacare premiums is the fault of the Democrats for giving us a product that never had a chance of working. That's like saying that a shooting victim jumped in front of the bullet. Yeah. Whew. I know there's enough, lots of pregnant pauses. You could drive trucks through this stuff. But damn. As Sparky noting, bend over and kiss your ass goodbye, Bob. That's what they told us to do if the 16 B-52s took off from Guam with nukes. I got a feeling we won't use those B-52s, though. A lot harder to shoot down an ICBM. Especially one loaded with MIRVs. And of course, there's no consideration for not for an instant that that old Kim Jong bad haircut would have himself a hardened nuclear anti-nuclear bunker that he could go to and survive whatever it was, whatever kind of hellfire and damnation slaughter that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini decided to unleash on a bunch of peasants. Yeah. It's a little unnerving. It's a lot unnerving. And of course, as Brad and Desi mentioned, they're drinking tainted Superfund water in Puerto Rico. Because as Trump said, it's not a big disaster, not like Katrina was. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then there's Joe Manchin, my senator. Joe was outraged, I tell you, outraged by the CBS News Washington Post reporting on what Republicans in Congress had done to gut the DEA. And before I say another word about this, let me say that defending the DEA is not my ordinary default position. For the most part, to the extent that they have been involved in prosecuting our war on drugs, which has largely focused on the suppression of a plant that cannot help but grow on planet Earth. I mean, even after we do ruin the planet, hemp will probably and cannabis will probably still grow here. And a few million years from now, when it'll probably be the size of fucking redwood trees, and the 6 foot tall race of sentient cockroaches will be stoned to the bejesus belt. But the DEA has wasted billions, if not trillions, of taxpayer dollars trying to interdict pot. Alongside of coke and heroin and various and sundry other substances. LSD, ecstasy. Yeah. And so I'm recognizing the really stupid things that the DEA has done over the years, and the vast amounts of national treasure that they have squandered in the process. Well, I kind of feel a little funky defending them. But facts are facts. And one of those facts was that once upon a time, the DEA did have the power to interdict pill dumping. The DEA had the power to use law enforcement means to stop conscienceless drug corporations from burying places like West Virginia in opioids. That was until last year. That's when Representative Tom Marino of Pennsylvania, along with some other well-paid members of Congress, pushed for a modification to the DEA's authority that made it impossible for the DEA to stop the pill dumping. The House passed it. I don't remember mentioning this. I don't remember it getting any significant coverage in the for-profit media. The House passed it. The Senate passed it. You know, back then when the House, when the Senate couldn't pass its own shadow. But the Senate passed it. It landed on Barack Obama's desk, and Barack Obama signed it, and it became law. And boom, pills. About 142 people a day die in the United States from the effects of opioids, pills. After the law was passed, the DEA couldn't restrict the flow of pain pills to wherever it was the drug companies wanted them to go. And apparently one of those places was West Virginia, because we don't have a lot of law enforcement, don't have a lot of capacity to fight that sort of thing. And given the things that do take up law enforcement's time around here, it was highly unlikely that law enforcement would be inclined to go chasing after something that was, after all, perfectly legal and obtainable with a prescription. The Washington Post referred to the law as, quote, the crowning achievement of a multifaceted campaign by the drug industry to weaken aggressive DEA enforcement efforts against drug distribution companies that were supplying corrupt doctors and pharmacists who peddled narcotics to the black market. Well, enter Joe Manchin, interviewed by PBS. He, with his soft-spoken ways, said, this is the biggest public health crisis since HIV/AIDS. We need someone leading the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy who believes we must protect our people, not the pharmaceutical industry. This, of course, coming from the mouth of the father of Heather Bresch, who gouged the United States for God knows how many millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, on things like the EpiPen. And yes, Mylan Pharmaceuticals makes a few generic opioids while they're at it. Sure, why not? So after Joe Manchin raised a ruckus, Tom Marino withdrew his name from consideration to be the drug czar. But it's Titanic Tuesday, and of course we celebrate Titanic intellect on Titanic Tuesday. And here it is. Joe Manchin, looking for someone to blame for the crisis. Who'd he go after? Did he say, son of a bitch, I shouldn't have voted for that? No, he didn't do that. Goddamn House of Representatives? Nope. Not going to do that. The hell kind of leadership do we have over here in the Senate that would let a bill like that sneak through? Nope, sorry. No, he went after the Obama administration because they failed to, quote, sound the alarm on how harmful that bill would be for our efforts to effectively fight the opioid epidemic. Damn you, Obama administration, for not telling me I was a dumbass for doing the dumbass thing that I did when I voted for that dumbass dangerous bill. What kind of dumbasses do you think we are? Oops. There you go. Meanwhile, just to point this out, I've mentioned in the past, and in fact it's been the focus of my some of the recent work we've been doing in Washington, D.C., I've pointed out that we've talked about it. The Department of Department of Interior, Ryan Shrinky Zinke, suspended and suppressed a review of health science data that points to a causal link between mountaintop removal and innocent people who just happen to live nearby and have to breathe the toxic filth that comes off of them. Yeah, that was suppressed back in August, almost exactly 2 months ago. Joe Manchin still hasn't said a goddamn word about that. Didn't bother him even the teeniest, tiniest little bit that the Trump administration was suppressing a review of that science that was intimately concerned with whether or not the coal industry was poisoning Joe's own constituents. Oh, wait. Joe's own constituents? Well, that is the coal industry. Silly me. But Joe's terrible, terrible upset, as you can well imagine. Once again, this focuses people's attention on the damn drug companies. Right? Yeah. But Joe's going to get credit for having stopped Tom Marino from being the drug czar when he was more or less just the guy who kicked open the door to Appalachia for the drug industry. And, you know, people just continue to die here. But you know what? If we ended the opioid crisis tomorrow in West Virginia, people would continue to die here. Because that's what we do in Appalachia. We die for the good of the rest of the country. We've done it for 100 years or more. Somewhere around 1,000 a year for over 100 years. I was thinking about it the other day. While my father and my uncles were off fighting fascism, my grandfather was down deep in a coal mine shoveling coal. By then, in 1943, he would have been 49 years old, younger than I am now. Miles deep in the bowels of the earth, shoveling coal into cars, that would be weighed at the end of his shift. Well, maybe by then he wouldn't get paid by the ton. Maybe he was getting paid by the hour by then. He had something resembling a respectable life by then because of, you know, what FDR had done and the Democratic Congress had done with the National Labor Relations Act. But he was down there, miles deep in the earth, shoveling coal. And that coal would come out, and it would get on a train, and it would go to Pittsburgh, where they'd make steel out of it. And the steel would be used for things like airplanes and tanks, rifle barrels, the armor plating on ships, and the skin of submarines. And hundreds and thousands of other men did the same. Agnes's dad was too old to fight in the Second World War, too. But by God, he wasn't too old to be down in the mines, working his ass off to stop fascism. Hell of a thing. Going down in the mines every day and wondering if you're going to be burned up or blown up or buried alive or drowned. And if you're not, if you're going to get out of there and go home at the end of your shift after you've been to the bathhouse, got cleaned up, and find a telegram waiting for you saying that one of your boys is dead. That happened. That happened to my grandfather. And of course, he sacrificed a portion of his life doing that coal mining. Nobody put a gun to his head. It's just all there was around here. So, like I said, if we end the opioid crisis tomorrow, it won't end the unnecessary deaths. Because we'll still have the coal, you know, the coal industry we have always with you here in Appalachia. But don't look for any scorching Jeremy ads from Joe Manchin on those deaths. Because those deaths don't much matter. Because he doesn't even think they're real. If somebody just happens to die after breathing toxic blasting dust for 15 or 20 years, well, you know, they smoked. Or they ate too much bacon. Or they drank too hard. You know, even if they didn't smoke, were vegetarian, and absolute teetotalers. You see how that works. So, it'll be interesting to watch that story shake out. Another story I'm watching shake out. By the way, the lines are open if you want to engage in some conversation. That's fine. 304-574-8178. Or, from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Get you right in. Randy in PA says, what a choice. You can work in the coal mines or you and your family can starve. They might as well have put a gun to his head. Well, when he was a young miner, like he is in the photograph down to the World O' Biscuits. I've mentioned it before. They've got a panoramic photo down there from 1921 of the day shift at the Gauley Mountain Coal Company. He's in there. He's in that photo. He's 27 years old. He's waiting for the birth of his, or has, yeah, he's waiting for the birth of his first child. She just died a couple of weeks ago. He's got a sort of bemused look on his face, and his miner's helmet and his carbide lamp are kind of askew on his head. Over at the other end is his father-in-law and his brother-in-law, and his other brother-in-law is just a few feet away from him. And that's 1921. There's no union. If it's before, well, if it's not too deep into 1921, all hell's about to break loose down Logan County way. When things got so bad that the miners who had organized ignored the pleas of Mother Jones, told her she'd lost her nerve, took up arms, and engaged in violence against the coal company, who was immediately reinforced by the National Guard and the United States military, including Billy Mitchell, who wanted to fly over and drop bombs on the miners, just to see if it would work. Mm-hmm. And back then, they did have a gun to their head. Either mine coal the way we say mine coal, or, well, you just might not make it home some evening. In a little town not too far from here, called Thurmond, there were no roads. There was only the railroad. And so people would walk home along the railroad tracks, and at night you did not walk down the tracks. Imagine this, pitch dark night. You don't walk down the tracks with a lantern because you will get killed. That was the reality around here. People died then. People died now. They died a horrible death at Monongah in December of 1907. Most of those were Italian immigrants. Italian immigrants had a hell of a time in the mines. A bunch of them were more or less shanghaied off the boat and brought to West Virginia. Joe Manchin is of Italian heritage. He cares about those folks, because it's heritage. He talks a lot about what happened in 1968 at the Farmington disaster up in Marion County, where he grew up. That led to some of the most serious coal mining safety reforms this country has ever undertaken. But getting Joe to get upset about ordinary, everyday, workaday people who aren't coal miners, who might be, oh, I don't know, policemen, firemen, firefighters, Walmart workers, teachers, stay-at-home moms or dads, disabled people, opioid addicts, who get poisoned by what they breathe because of the explosion set off by his coal company constituents. Yeah, getting him to care about that, that's pretty well near impossible. Yeah. So there we go. Just wanted to make sure you knew that Joe was out there pointing his finger in the wrong direction. But then again, he had to blame Obama. It was political. You know, he'd say, "Tell Obama I always liked him. It was only business." Because his constituents spit on the ground and screamed that word. that those little girls were screaming at the mere mention of Obama. Because this here is Trump country. The Trumpiest place on earth. So any chance he gets to get a dig in at Obama, he's going to do it because he's got a hell of a re-election campaign in front of him. On the one hand, he's got a challenger for the Democratic primary who doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell. But who can do sufficient damage to make sure that he doesn't get reelected? Because he'll be facing a Republican challenger with all kinds of money. More than likely, it'll be West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, one of the people who helped to whose associates flooded the state with opioids. And so the drug companies will give him a shit ton of money, and there will be a shit ton of dark money buying ads behind him. See above. And that may be just enough to do old Joe in. And there would be a certain irony. Yeah, if the last few minutes are haven't made it clear, I am not a member in good standing of the Joe Manchin fan club. As often as not, he has been an impediment to progress in this state and not a supporter of it. But that having been said, there would be a screaming irony if, and just work with me here, let's say that everybody but Joe hangs on to his Senate seat, or her, from the Democrats. Let's say on top of that, let's get Doug Jones in the Senate from Alabama, and let's say that a senator, some Democrat rises up in Tennessee and wins Bob Corker's seat, and let's say that some Democrat bumps off Dean Heller in Nevada. Joe Manchin's loss will be enough to prevent the Democrats from having a majority in the Senate. And every tie vote will be broken by Mike Pencilneck Geek. Because don't for a minute think that the people who are going to vote, who might vote for the primary opponent of Joe Manchin, are going to turn around and vote for Joe in the general. This will, of course, be another case of inuring to the benefit of the Republican Party. And that would be too damned ironic for tolerance. Yeah. 28 minutes past the hour. By the way, our best wishes here at the Horn Family Community Congregation going out to our buddy News Ninja Gene. Gene had a tumble out of his chair recently, and apparently he is bumped and bruised, but nothing broken. But a bit stoved up and beat up. Gene, we all hope you feel a lot better, a lot soon. Just so you know, Gene's been a news ninja since news ninjas were invented. Pretty much the entire history of the Horn. So hope you're feeling better, Gene. I really do. Let's check in and go chat with Charlie down in Tennessee. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going, Bob?
I'm here.
Well, I just talked to the insurance company today about my recent medical mishaps, and
you're not screaming, you know, so you're not screaming yet. So maybe I'm hoping that's a good thing.
Oh no, I
got the screaming out of the way early.
Pardon me?
Got the screaming out of the way early?
Yeah, I had my insurance carrier conference me in with the hospital billing people. this particular hospital down here in Gallatin contracts their billing out to another company. And basically, what I learned today was contracts can have a binding contract. I mean, hospitals can have a binding contract with an insurance company, and it doesn't mean squat. It surprised me. There were some things that weren't supposed to be billed because they were covered by a different procedure. They were part of a different procedure, which in effect is double billing. And the insurance company, whenever the insurance company conferenced me in with the hospital billing people, I gave them the number for the billing for Sumner County Regional Medical Center. And basically, whenever I talked to them, you know, the insurance company asked them about a particular item that they billed, and they said, you know, that was legit, and the insurance company wasn't going to pay for it, and they wanted me to pay for it. And the insurance company said, well, that's supposed to be part of this procedure over here. And in effect, what you've done is double billing. In the hospital, the billing people did not really care. And what really set me off is the lady at the hospital billing company said, The insurance asked her, didn't you get our explanation of benefits on the 20th of May? And evidently, the hospitals just throw this away. It's like garbage to them. And they go ahead and bill what they want.
Nice.
And, you know, I'm learning a lot about hospitals, and they're not a very moral organization. I mean, they kind of exceed Donald Trump on the SCUS part of doing business.
It almost sounds like the insurance company is not quite the total villain here quite as much as the hospital is.
Right, and they want me to pay the difference.
Just out of curiosity, how many digits is the difference? It's not like $29.95. Five digits?
More like $466 and something. And then TriStar Medical, you know, that's the outfit that Bill Frist started, you know, the heart surgeon that was...
Bill Cat Killer Frist, yes.
Yes, I feel like I'm going to have another issue with them for about, between $5,000 and $6,000. Because first of all, they're an in-network hospital, but all the doctors they hire in the emergency room are out of network.
I'm going to say something that you might laugh at. But you're at a place where you got to try to use whatever tools you have. You know, if you're trying to drive a nail in a board, and you don't have a hammer handy, you can use the hard end of a screwdriver, right? Handle end. Try to just tap. Not quite as effective, but you might actually get the job done, Charlie. In that, you need to reach out to Lamar and Bob, your senators. And isn't your member of the House of Representatives Marsha?
Oh, yeah, the stupid little Brentwood bitch.
Well, I'm not crazy about the B word, but, goodness, Marsha Blackburn, Marsha, goodness. They exist for helping to sort these things out, and it's amazing what a letter from a congressperson or a senator can do to resolve this kind of foolishness. So but you'll never know unless you try, Charlie.
Yeah, I tell you what, I've been in Nashville since 2011, and I'm not from this area of Tennessee. I was born and raised over in the Appalachian Mountains, over just south of Gate City and just west of North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, up in that area of Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like somebody went down here on 8th Avenue, where the reservoir is in Nashville, and dumped about 50 million gallons of stupid in the water supply, and the people are drinking it. I mean, you know.
With a straw, yes.
I can't understand it. You know, they know that the Republicans are out to screw them out of everything they can get, and they'll still vote for them. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well,
I just can't understand it. I can't.
Well, maybe the best way to understand it, Charlie, is to understand that they don't think the way you do. They it's almost like they speak a different language.
And you know, Bob, here's the thing that really
their brains have been rewired.
You know, these people that claim to be Christians and all that. Well, you know, the Bible plainly says that you cannot serve two masters. You will love one and hate the other. Nobody can serve mammon and God at the same time. But these stupid people down here in Middle Tennessee, they'll say, oh, this guy's got, you know, millions of dollars. He's a good man. And I'm sitting there thinking, what you just said doesn't make sense. It's opposed to itself, what you just said. And, you know, it boggles my mind. I mean, these people are stupid with a capital S-T-U-P-I-D.
I know, but there you are. And it's not like it's something that just happened, okay? It's an outgrowth of the pseudo-aristocratic social structure that has obtained in the South just about since white folks set foot on it. It's a totally different structure. You know, the settlement and the colonization of the Southern states is entirely different from the experience that was had in the Northern states. And Tennessee wasn't one of the original 13, but it was settled by, primarily it was, you know, an extension of North Carolina.
Right.
And so those are the folks who just moved west and became Tennesseans.
Yeah.
And that is that, and that is that, that aristocracy. And on top of that, from a historical standpoint, you know, you do get the up from the bootstraps, flinty, self-reliant, you know, skin of their teeth type settlers coming across. David Crockett was one of those. And, you know, by the time he got all the way to western Tennessee, out there where they called the Shakes, you know, out there, in the earthquake area, out there near the Mississippi River, by the time he got out there, land speculators had already bought everything up. And so he couldn't even find anything to work there. And that's why he winds up, he's running from creditors when he goes to Texas. And so that, you know, the systems of government that develop in the South are different from the ones in the North. And the social systems that develop as a result primarily of slavery are equally different, and they are far more unjust and far more brutal, because while the South was predicated on slavery, it also had secondarily you had to keep the poor whites down too, and you had to keep them from forming alliances with black folks. because then they could overturn the government. You see what I mean?
Yep. Well, that's another thing that gets me, too, is you were talking about the goings-on earlier in Utah. And, you know, I cannot understand how people can be claim to be such good people and, oh, they worship God and all that. And then they, you know, they think that it's okay to say that, well, black people are inferior, but if they read their Bible claims that God made black people and white people. And so, you know, I mean, if you believe the story of creation, I mean, what the way they should look at that is all races came from Adam and Eve. It's just as people wandered into different areas of the world, you know, subtle, just minor genetic changes took place for them to make.
Oh, no,
part of the world.
No, Charlie, no. That is not how it works according to a fundamentalist worldview.
Oh,
God,
it's
not? No, after the flood, God created black people as a punishment of.
Got anything new?
Yeah, about a small.
Oh,
business.
Sorry.
So you want
wait a minute.
To grow your little moving company.
I hate auto run audio.
Oh, you're talking about the cursing of Ham.
Yes.
We have no idea what color Ham was.
Oh no! All you got to do is ask an evangelical fundamentalist, and they'll tell you. Yeah, God turned him black. Now, I think.
Well, how do they know that? The Bible doesn't even say that. How
well,
do
no,
know
it
that?
It doesn't. But the you know their minds tell them that, well what passes for their minds. But if you want to get down to it, if you think about what color, if you want to get down to it, though, here's the funny part. Given what color all the people were back then, at whatever time the ark would have happened, even though it didn't, if God turned Ham a different color to punish him, it was probably pink. Because pink folks come along a whole lot later than brown folks do.
Well, I don't think, you know, if you truly believe in the creation story of the Bible, I mean, I don't think Adam and Eve were white. They couldn't have been. Genetics doesn't work like that.
There wasn't an Adam and Eve. I mean, you know that.
I'm talking about from the fundamentalist point of view.
Well, from the fundamentalist point of view, Adam and Eve were white as ivory soap.
Well, genetics doesn't work.
No,
like
no, don't say genetics. They don't believe in genetics. They're creationists. They don't believe in evolution. Evolution happens as a result of genetics. There aren't any genetics. There's just creation.
Well, I don't. Their
See,
own
this
story
is what makes
is contradicting
it. Contradicting it. Sure, it is, but this is what makes it so difficult for me to be a person who doesn't drink anymore. You understand? I mean, God Almighty, it's.
I just can't understand why they, you know, there's different humans, and you know we have different color eyes, some have different color hair, some have different color skin. But we're all humans. I mean, you know.
I know.
It's just logical. I mean.
But going back to your original issue, Scott and Punky want you to know, just got an email. Tell Charlie that a detailed, polite letter or email to a House member and senators can work wonders in straightening out situations like his. I can speak from experience on this, and I highly recommend his taking your good suggestion. I don't know how good it was, but it's what you got, and you got to use every tool in the box in a situation like this. It's amazing how fast a letter from a senator or a member of the House will make things go away. So. You know,
well, just, I guess I can try, you know.
Can't do anything but. And see, it's kind of important because Lamar and Patty Murray reached an agreement today to try to keep the cost sharing reduction payments going for another couple of years.
Huh.
That's your senator trying to keep people covered, even though he's a Republican.
Well, I mean, you know, you do for your own first. I think, you know, if there's anybody sick in the United States and needs a little bit of help, that's the ones you help. You don't do like Mitch McConnell and say, we need to cut domestic spending. No, we need to cut foreign spending, Mitch. You take care of your own first. And, you know, I mean,
I think the first spending we need to cut is spending on Republicans having salaries in the House and Senate.
That would be good.
You reduce the number of Republicans drawing salaries in the House and Senate, and a lot of other things sort of fall in line almost as if by themselves, like magic.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where I'd start my fiscal conservatism. Quit paying so goddamn many Republicans in the House and Senate.
And I really, you know, one other thing here is I really can't see, because I kind of had a take it or leave it mentality with Trump whenever he was first elected. You know, it didn't really bother me that much, because, you know, most of the power lies with the House and Senate. And in the last 9 months or however long Trump's been in office now, I can tell you something, that man's crazier than hell. And I don't know. I'm afraid of him.
You damn well got a right to be. He's
dangerous.
And
why the American people can't see that, I don't know. And what's even worse is the number of people he got still supporting him, and they should realize that the man is crazy, and they still support him. I mean, you know, I'm just sitting back here looking and staring. It's like, oh, my God, don't they know this man is out of his treehouse? And they keep supporting him. And I don't know what's going to happen to this country. This country just can't take much more of that.
Well, here's the thing. Like I said earlier, it's the number of people. The idea that 46% of Republicans support a nuclear U.S. first strike on North Korea is just very nearly enough to turn my bowels to water. That's 4% away from 5% away from being a majority of one of the two political parties in this country. That's not 46% of Trump supporters. It's 46% of Republicans. Okay? That's 5 points away from being a majority of one of the two major political parties in this country supporting a nuclear holocaust. That's more than just people support Trump, Charlie.
Yeah.
That's some of your rock-ribbed Republican types. That's maybe some of your John Kasich supporters. That's your Tom Cotton voters in Arkansas and your Ben Sasse voters in Nebraska.
Yeah.
That's your Lamar Alexander voters in Tennessee and your Roy Moore voters in Alabama.
I don't think people understand what an all-out nuclear war would do. I mean, people don't realize that.
Well, they don't. They didn't even understand what a goddamned automatic weapon would do, firing into a crowd of 700 people, or 1,000 people.
Yeah.
So no, they have no idea what a nuclear weapon would do. And the fact of the matter is,
they don't understand that the air, you know, that the dust particles in the air and all become radioactive. They get up in the jet stream, God knows where that's going to go to, and fall back to Earth. And, you know, it doesn't take much of many nuclear bombs going off and
Well, that's what I was getting at, Charlie. Nobody knows what the impact would be of a thermonuclear device used on a human population. Okay, the two times that we used a fission device, they were just plain, if that's the appropriate term, and it's not. They were just plain atomic bombs, Fat Man and Little Boy, over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I'm not sure, whatever the correct pronunciation is.
Yeah.
Those weren't thermonuclear. I mean, those were not hydrogen bombs. Okay. What we're talking about, we're not. What we're talking about, what these fools support in the way of a U.S. nuclear first strike on North Korea, is a weapon that we have never seen in action against human beings. We've never seen it used in warfare.
Well, unless you can contain the radiation, you're going to cause a whole lot more to get poisoned than just in the area of the blast. I mean, we're talking about thousands of miles away, you know, that's going to suffer the effects of it. It won't be immediate, but it'll be, you know.
Yeah, as Sparky points out, it's kiloton versus megaton.
Yeah.
In terms of yield. And God only knows, what the comparison is in, radioactive content. That shit, depending on which way the wind blows, it's either going to blow into China and piss the Chinese right the hell off, or it'll blow over to Japan, or blow down into South Korea. And into the southern parts of China, or more southerly parts of China, there's no good outcome.
No.
And
I guess I'll get off here. I've been on here quite a while.
So. Well, that's okay. And well, look, I hope you will. I hope you will write those letters. Be polite. Be businesslike, and ask for help. And you'd be surprised what can happen. You know, even with Republicans.
Yeah.
All right, Charlie. Well, it's good hearing from you. I hope you have yourself a good evening.
Okie doke. Keep up the good work.
I'm trying.
Catch you later.
Later,
bye.
Charlie. Bye. Calling from Tennistan. That's our buddy Charlie. So we're pretty much at the end of the program this evening. Every now and then we lay a goose egg. This was one of them. So tomorrow the fundraising goal will be $335, depending on what happens with the overnight crew. And the overnight crew isn't just, you know, folks who are subscribers. Sometimes that's people who listen to the program and podcast and decide to kick in $5, $10, whatever. It's all welcome. Thanks for keeping the program on the air. And, wow. I promised we would, and by God, we did. We waded right back into the swamp tonight. I feel like my hip waders needed to be more like chin waders this evening. And yet, there's still other stuff left to be dealt with. Don't forget, you know, if you need a little pick-me-up after a wade through the swamp, there's nothing quite like collated collards. Collated collards from Horn Labs will fix what ails you, and it helps with all manner of manly and womanly problems. Collated collards, only from Horn Labs. I think I'm going to knock off a few minutes early, just because, I've been battling rather of a nasty headache all day long, and it doesn't seem to have got... I've done something. I think I may have coughed too hard or something, or slept wrong, but my upper back is a mess, and shooting pains down into my right arm, and that's never... And I think that's contributed to the headache. So, not that it makes much difference, but yeah, I'm going to go ahead and knock off because, well, darn it, everything else that I've got in the stack is going to take more than any 3 minutes or so to cover. By a long shot. But I will say this, if anybody finds Wilbur Ross's missing $2 billion laying around, you know, give Forbes magazine a call or something. You know, Wilbur Ross, Commerce Secretary, the man who was the principal owner of International Coal Group when 12 guys got, when a dozen guys got roasted, murdered, down inside a coal mine up in north central West Virginia. See, he had to fill out paperwork to be Commerce Secretary. And somehow or another, he just forgot about $2 billion that he had when he was doing his paperwork to be Secretary of Commerce. It's the damnedest thing. I mean, I'm kind of notorious for leaving the keys laying around so that I have to, honey, have you seen the car keys? And she'll, well, no, I haven't. What'd you do with them? Where'd you have them last? I don't know. And then eventually, it just because we put our minds together, we'll find the car keys. And so you can understand that. Or you know how it is when you're doing one thing and you get sidetracked and you start doing another, and then the next thing you know, you're burning that water that you were boiling on the stove. Yeah. Well, the same thing happened to Wilbur Ross. I mean, he sat down, he was counting his money, and he $1,999,999,999,999. And, you know, then the phone rang. And when he came back, he couldn't find those $2 billion, and so they didn't make it onto his disclosure. It's the damnedest thing. Yeah. So, like I said, if you see it laying around, be a good Sam, and make sure that you. Make sure that you let Wilbur know where the missing $2 billion is. Or better yet, maybe let the Congress... Nah, don't bother letting the Congress know. They don't give a shit. Practically everybody that's gone to work for Donald Trump has lied about their money. In some cases, lying about the amount of money, just lying about your money on the financial disclosure forms for being a cabinet secretary. There's a term for that now. It's called a Mnuchin. Well, how about that? Turns out I didn't knock off early after all. Here we are at the end of the program. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you in the chat room to Sparky and Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Again, hope you're feeling better, Gene. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. That's where the PayPal button is. And being as how we didn't raise anything this evening, maybe folks are helping out, helping Cold River Mountain Watch to keep a veteran couple and their special needs kids in a house and not letting the sheriff of Boone County take it for taxes that, you know, Wells Fargo didn't freaking pay. Maybe. Maybe. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.